Okay, so it's now sounding in a... It's been pulled to shreds, the house.
It's been pulled
Why
to shreds.
Why is there so much work?
Why? Basically, the flat was originally... Well, sorry, the house was originally partitioned into two flats, so we kind of actually bought it as two flats, and then what we're doing is we're, like, smashing, we're opening the whole thing up.
Yeah, you can hear
so
the smashing.
You can hear that smashing. That's more... Yeah, that's smashing, that's opening up. So this
and
is
how many people will live here?
Six of us.
Six?
Six.
All mates and your partner?
Yeah, six of us. It's going to be lush.
It's so sick.
So, you know, it took a lot of good chats and, you know, good communication, because everyone, you've got to, like, ask whatever. I mean, imagine, it's like you're trying
to
actually...
Yeah, it's so intense. I mean, I was hearing little bits about it. It is really intense.
Yeah.
We have to decide everything together.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back
to Life of Bi. Or if this is your first time, nice to meet you.
You found us.
I'm Mary.
And I'm Elle. And that was the voice of our mate Liz.
So Liz and five of her mates, including her partner, have just moved in, as you might have just worked out, to a house near us. They've bought it, actually.
All together.
And all six of them are going to live in this house together. And they're building it, basically.
They're building it with their own bare hands.
It used to be two flats, and they're smashing down those walls.
Smashing down the walls.
To make a new communal living space.
Yep.
And, you know, I've popped round one of our housemates. We've gone round, knocked a wall down, done some cleaning.
And it's incredibly inspiring what they're doing.
Yeah, amazing.
Because they're basically making a space for themselves and going against the norm of what most people do, which is, you know, you meet someone, maybe you move in with them,
mm-hmm.
maybe one day you buy a house together, if you can ever do that with just two people. And what they've done is all club together as mates. And I think that is pretty cool.
Yeah, there's obviously privilege involved, but it's an amazing thing to be able to do. And obviously, if you chip in with six of your friends,
then it makes it much more possible.
It's much more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's just got us thinking, mm-hmm. basically, about... Well, I think I always dream of, like, a...
Mm-hmm.
Well, a big poly house is the words I use, which isn't what they've got. They're all, like, they're mates, platonic mates. And then
you want, like,
partnership.
A polycule...
Yeah, maybe. I dream about it. I don't, you know, I haven't like ironed out the details. I just know that I want to live communally.
Yeah.
And that I don't get excited by the idea of like just living with my current long-term partner.
Yeah. And personally speaking, I want to be alone forever. So we have very different, at the moment, ideas of what we want from our living situations. But all this just got us thinking about what our futures look like.
Yeah.
And what how you build a queer home.
Yeah, what is a queer home?
What
and also,
it?
Like, what's a queer family?
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, how... I mean, specifically for us, I guess, as artists, but, like, how are our generation...
Going to do
How
that?
Else are we going to...
Yep.
Get onto the ladder or like find stability. Like, what does that look like as we approach our 30s? You do start to wonder when stability is going to kick in.
Yeah.
As you know, was it your blind boy says that thing
love? Yeah, about perpetual kittenhood.
Yeah, because we're millennials.
Because we're millennials. I mean, maybe we'll come to that later.
Okay.
But we'll put a pin in it. But also, our lease is going to come to an end at the end of this year.
Yes,
and we're
stress.
Like, will we still be here? Yesterday, I found out...
Will it
out,
go up? So stressful.
Should I share what I found out yesterday about the banks?
Oh, I think maybe no.
Okay.
It's so shit. I mean, no, go on.
Okay, I'll share it. So, guys, what I found out yesterday is that, you know how in the financial crash, like 10 or so years ago, the reason that happened is because they were lending too many mortgages... like the, and then the banks lost all that money and they collapsed. Banks realised that they can't keep lending mortgages. They're not going to make money that way. So instead, all the big banks like Goldman Sachs and Lloyds TSB, they're buying houses instead, buying flats on a huge scale, and they're renting them out. They're becoming corporate landlords because that's how they're going to make money. So they're not doing mortgages anymore. That's not their long-term plan. And that terrifies me.
That is the sort of news that I just want to instantly compartmentalize. You know, and you're like, I can't deal with the reality of that thing. Like, that is so evil, and I'm so unable to control it that I would just rather that I instantly forgot it.
Yeah.
Like, instantly forgot that that was possible.
And I'm sorry now, everyone who's like, listened to move this on. Is cursed by that knowledge.
That's so shit.
But
luckily... It's thanks. So therefore, like, thank God that we have examples of people like Lids and their mates for living in a slightly different way. And I tell you what, the really joyful thing about going to the building site is that you can see the remnants of these two super pokey, shitty Haringey flats, right? Like, in the worst landlord way, as in like just making tiny kitchens and little tiny pokey toilets.
They've taken a house for people like in the States, because we have quite a lot of States listeners. Like, you have a lot of terraced houses here that are like split into two flats, and they basically try and shove as many people in as possible, right?
And people that and it's also people that don't necessarily know each other, so it's not built towards spending time together. It's actually all about like separating everything, so the shower is in a different tiny corridor from the toilet,
and
which is
like
a different tiny
room,
corridor from the kitchen.
The living room has been designed to be a bedroom instead, so like there's no communal space.
It's just like cramped and everything, and like these guys, because they're got the whole thing, most of what they were doing in the first few weeks was like knocking down walls, and
destroying.
It's like light is like flooding into this place, and it's an amazing thing to be part of, where you're like, you're literally, the culture is designed to live alone and independently, and like capitalism is all about like individual survival, and then you get this like group of queer mates who come in and they like literally like smashing walls down, making this beautiful space from the shell of two pokey flats. And I think, I mean, the other thing, I think Lids mentioned this in the thing, but in terms of like gentrification, which is obviously a thing, they basically were choosing places that where families weren't living. She just wanted to let me know that like the landlord was basically like an awful guy.
And
it was like sharers, not like a family that's been there for years. But that's the caveat. That's the gentrification caveat that had to happen.
Yeah. So they are physically and symbolically transforming this space to make it their own.
And we've started thinking about, well, metaphorically and figuratively, how you transform convention and expectation into an idea of queer home and queer family. So I'm so excited to talk about this book. So one of our housemates got this book, but it's been floating around for a while.
Cess. They know Cess.
Cess.
Friends of the pod.
Friends of the pod. You know Cess, our lovely housemate. Anyway, they had this book that they recommended to both me and Elle, Sounds Fake But Okay, which is all about like asexuality and aromanticism and looking at the world through an a-spec lens. And I read it recently and I just loved it. I really recommend it to anyone, particularly if you liked our podcast on asexuality, or if you had like more questions after it. I learned so much again from reading their book. Anyway, it's by Sarah Costello and Kayla Kajika, and they sort of break down the sort of concept is that you can look at all of life with an a-spec lens, and that basically what it teaches you is that there are no shoulds about how to do anything, and that the big words coming up, amatonormativity, which is that word. Do you remember, what's that mean again?
Which is the presumption that everything is done like with a couple in mind.
Thank you. I just couldn't
or, like,
be bothered.
Or like with like romantic love as like the aim in life.
Yeah, that those are the most important relationships in your life, the romantic sexual relationships. And like mononormativity, which is that like monogamy is the only way to live.
Yeah.
And they break it down, they look at different facets of life. And one of them is family and home. And they talk about,
and like, when you say there are no shoulds,
yeah,
like it's like those typical life staging posts of like, there is no, you should get married. There is no, you should move in with your partner.
Yeah.
There is no, you should get a dog.
Yeah. There are no like set ways of doing anything, yeah,
no expectations.
Which obviously makes, you know, in some ways life a bit harder, but they also talk about basically how it spurs on having intentional conversations mm-hmm. about basically everything. And one of them is the dream of like, so it's like a common anxiety that people on the A-spec have, which is mm-hmm. that the people around them in their somatonormative culture, their like allosexual friends, will partner off with their people, couple off, throuple off, whatever, mm-hmm. and start their lives with these romantic them. Sexual people and sort of like, yeah, move on from those platonic relationships. Mm-hmm. That is what like the culture tells us to do, that the platonic close relationships are for when you're younger.
Yeah.
You and have those you really mature. Close friends through school, and when yeah. you mature, in quotation marks, you start being with your romantic and sexual people, and like an yeah. asexual person would be left on their own. That's like a key anxiety, which I actually yeah. talked to Sess about.
Yeah.
And so they're like imagining other ways to live that don't mean that an asexual person is going to be like on their own, or like mm-hmm, how mm-hmm. an asexual or aromantic person would choose who to live with.
Yeah.
If it's not based on that stuff.
Yep.
And I just thought it was great. And it made me think and lots about like living with friends. Actually, it sort of undid it's my funny. Poly house dream.
And
I was a bit like, well, I don't need to be having sex with everyone. That's actually not what I'm yeah. going for. The main thing is that I want community.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
don't, that like, as long as I care a lot about everyone in the house
yeah.
and love them, I don't care what kind of love it is.
Yeah, totally. What's funny is that like, the way that like politically and economically the UK is at the moment, and I don't know if this is the same like elsewhere in the world, is that like for some people they're like, oh, I'll just live with my parents and then I'll move out with my partner. Mm-hmm. Like I know some people from my past who have done that, so they've like completely missed out the middle bit.
Crazy.
Of like living with friends, like they stay with their parents
to save up money,
and then like they immediately move in. Like I was with a family friend at the weekend who'd literally just done that, and I was like, well, the first thing you did was like buy a house with your partner, go straight from living with your parents to that. It was like,
that's
crazy, like completely jump that middle ground. But for a lot of
I guess
us,
it's what that's like 19th century.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's yeah. insane.
With your dowry. Obviously, I was thinking that. I didn't tell them, but I was like, you know, and you're like, well, your life is very different to mine. Like, and then so there's that happening, which I think quite a lot of people do. Like,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, listen, that's what you know.
Yeah. And some people can survive that. Like,
obviously, that brings me like personally out in hives.
Like, my palms are actually sweating thinking about it. Because like, anyway. But then on the other side of it, like, we've gone down that route of like, we're essentially learning how to live with a family with each other. Like,
yeah.
all of our housemates, we are a family. And it made me think about, we mentioned in the intro, this concept of perpetual kittenhood.
Yeah, here we go.
Which is not...
Ding, ding, blind boy.
Yeah, not our term. It's blind boy. And I can't recommend his podcast enough, guys. Obviously, you probably heard
we
of it.
We both love it.
He's the king of podcasts. But this idea of perpetual kittenhood is that people don't know what to do with the age group 25 to 40
at
the moment. Which is like, you're meant to be an adult, but because of various factors like the financial crash, the fact that we can't own homes, the fact that all of us are still renting, some of us are living with parents until we're 30, like we're in this state where if a cat is like born in the wild,
yeah,
after kittenhood it will stop meowing, like it,
right.
it just like doesn't meow anymore, but a cat kept in domesticity will continue to meow because it's in a state of perpetual kittenhood. And basically society has kept us in like this adolescent state because
yes.
we can't do any of like the quote unquote mature things, like all those staging posts of like, you know, buying a house or whatever.
Yeah, the life we were promised. Yeah. The boomer life you're promised.
Yeah, because like you see your parents bought houses in like the 90s. For, yeah, like,
or an illusion of meritocracy, you know, you just work hard and you'll be able to do your life. And it's like,
really
not true.
Interesting how it like infiltrates all of life. Like if you work in like a big corporate office, then there'll be like a section with beanbags and like a fridge full of fizzy drinks and chocolate. Because it's like your dream teenage bedroom, but you don't have any rights.
Yeah.
They just keep you quiet with your God. Dream bedroom.
Yeah.
But it's at work, so you never have to go home.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd recommend listening to that podcast in full if you'd like to.
Which one is it? It's the Barbie one, isn't it?
I think it's the Barbie one. Yeah, it's about Barbie.
Yeah.
About the Barbie movie. And I was thinking about this and how, like, we can't really make adult decisions for ourselves when we're renting. So, like, the perfect example of that is we had to ask our landlord if we could paint one wall in our house pink. Because, like, we just wanted some semblance of ownership of this place that we live in. And the amazing thing about the house that Lids and Co. are in is that they've painted the whole thing pink. Like, the whole outside is pink.
Yeah, the whole outside is Barbie Dreamhouse pink.
Yeah.
So, hang on. So, you're bringing in the stuff about, like, the economy. How does that link to A-spec?
I think that, like,
lens.
What's interesting is that even people who don't identify as, like, ace or anything are having to find new ways to conceive of their future. Because, like, actually the path, the mononormative and heteronormative
path doesn't work.
Actually is failing everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just failing A-spectrum people. It's sort of everyone is in this position where you're having to think of alternative ways to live.
Yeah.
And, like, that's why I think in the A-spectrum episode, the thing that we, like, concluded was, well, everyone can learn from this, thinking outside the box. And I think it's the same here.
And that there's a great need, basically, for people to be imaginative.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the dream we were sold is not going to work.
Exactly.
Yeah, love that. No matter who you are, though, right? Like, what your... how you relate to sex or relationships or however you identify... humans, like, we need stability.
Uh-huh.
Like, ultimately, and at some point, you need stability. And I think maybe it feels particularly pressing because we're in our late 20s and it's something you think about more.
Mm-hmm.
But we all need stability and we all need community. And so we basically just got interested in, like, how can you make these unconventional setups more stable, because the one that you and I are in right now obviously is, like, beautiful but rented, unstable.
Yeah.
The ones that our mates got, they're like 5 years of commitment, they're all on a contract. Yeah. And, like, that stability is, I think, what really makes us salivate, which is, like, imagine knowing that that place is yours for a set period of time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so we were thinking, how are people, like, legislating for that kind of setup? And are people doing that?
Yeah, and beyond just, like, having mates together, what happens when you add in, like, children?
Mm.
And, like, having children together, how does the law work around that?
So we found this amazing TED Talk.
Oh my God, they're so cool.
With a person called Diana Adams, who is the founder of the Chosen Family Law Center in the US.
And the Chosen Family Law Center is like a non-profit corporation dedicated to cultivating equitable social and legal recognition of LGBTQIA and polyamorous families and individuals. So it's like looking at, like,
same-sex parents.
Yeah, so any underserved form of families. Yeah, so same-sex parents, platonic co-parents.
Polyamorous and multi-parents.
Trans and gender non-conforming parents.
Caretakers of disabled people.
And immigrants and asylees.
And basically this whole TED Talk is about how US laws have to expand beyond nuclear families.
My definition of family is people who are committed to be there for each other no matter what. This includes chosen family, regardless of biological relationship or legal marriage. Many Black families in the US have chosen aunties and uncles with no blood relation, but a decision to be family and a commitment to the children involved. Countless LGBTQ people create chosen family when they're rejected by their family of origin or when wanting to create families that share their values. I am one of those queer people to find home with chosen family.
essentially Diana's argument, right, is that having these ways of making family that don't look like a nuclear family isn't anything new. It's just that the law at the moment doesn't give the same privileges and perks to a non-nuclear family.
Yeah, and the nuclear family itself was like invented as a concept in the 60s.
Yeah.
And all of the laws that like pertain to protecting the nuclear family are that old. Like they don't reflect how people live now. And part of Diana's work is changing.
And that's not even taking into account, like, we're not even talking about LGBTQIA or like queerness necessarily, but like even within the heteronormative family model, very few of those families are nuclear,
yeah,
because you'll have like single parents or divorce. And if you have a single parent, you might have been raised by your gran instead, which is called like a multi-generational family. Like we set up families however we need to,
yeah,
and it just so happens that one very limited form is the one that's like recognized.
Yeah, especially in the US, where things like a domestic setup will help you get things like health insurance and stuff. So Diana's work is changing the law to reflect that. They're also the co-founder of the Polyamory Legal Advocacy Coalition.
So exciting.
Really excited, Mary, when they heard that. I mean, it's a very exciting name.
It shouldn't be, but I just put polyamory in front of anything. And I've never been excited about the words legal advocacy or coalition before. But I was like, wow. But yeah, basically they just work on legislative advocacy for those in consensually non-monogamous relationships. That's just what we're talking about. Like, they just protect polyamorous people from being discriminated against.
Woo!
We fucking love that.
Design relationships for polyamorous triads of three or quads of four. I sometimes use existing legal structures like trusts or LLCs that allow you to share property and finances without a question as to your relationship. So for example, if I've got a polyamorous triad, Aisha, Susan, and Linda, I can set up an LLC for them so that they can co-own real estate properties, pay taxes together, purchase a common health insurance, and have clear exit strategies if they wish.
I love the idea of setting up a company for you and your lovers. Lovers Limited.
I was like, what would you call it? You could call it anything.
Anything you wanted.
Anything.
I'm obsessed with it.
The sex triad.
Anyway, this the sex triad's great.
I don't fucking know.
I wanted to return quickly here, or like just like take a little like detour, beep off to the side.
Yep.
Because while we're still talking about polyamorous relationships, I just wanted to segue back to how we started with like sounds fake but okay, and like the A-spec lens and way of seeing things.
Yeah.
Because actually that book is one of the things that made me start thinking about a lot of this stuff. And one of the examples that thrilled me in that book was this guy, David J, who's a very prominent asexual. He's like the founder of the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, like, you know, but a big dude. Mm-hmm. And it just talks, I basically just did a bit more searching, Googling around him once he came up in this book, because basically Jay wanted kids and to be a co-parent, but is asexual and aromantic, which means respectively that he doesn't experience sexual attraction and doesn't experience romantic attraction to people, but he still wanted kids and to be a co-parent. And he's managed to form a three-parent adoption with two friends of his. They're a couple, two gay guys. And he now lives with both of them as their like platonic domestic partner.
Wow.
As this three-parent family in the state of California.
Wow.
And I just thought it was like, I don't know, I just thought it was beautiful. And what I think one of the things that I loved about that story and generally about Jay is that because of his like identity, his like sexual orientation, his romantic orientation, he has to have these like beautifully intentional conversations with people that we would normally traditionally reserve for like your romantic partner. But for instance, like Jay met this guy who he had this like very close bond with, and they were deep friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that guy was in a relationship with someone else, they had a conversation about like what that would look like,
amazing,
what that could look like. And they invited him to adopt with them. And I just cannot, like, that's a beautiful, That is such a beautiful...
It's so beautiful. And it's also worth mentioning that the fact that they're in California is significant, because California is one of the few states where you can do that. Where you can have a three-parent family.
Yes, yeah.
And that's only quite a recent introduction. And pretty radical, if you ask me.
I mean, it's radical even to ask these questions that we're expected to know the answers to, right? Which is like, how do we want to show our care for each other? Shouldn't be a radical question. But because there are dominating ways, like there are mainstream ways to do that, it is a radical question. Like, how are we going to commit? If it's not going to be in the assumed ways of having sex together, what does commitment look like to us? How do we want to live together? Again, there's no assumptions. You're just going into everything with this like wide-eyed, open, curious state, because nothing is assumed. And I think that, I mean, I just can't talk about that without getting so excited, because it's just such an exciting way to approach life. And it just means there aren't any fucking rules. Like, you can decide this stuff on your own.
And that is like incredibly liberating. But then the flip side of it is that if you haven't answered all of those questions, or like you don't agree on all the answers to those questions, then it can end up in a bit of a mess.
That I've seen too many situations of ambiguity where mom calls him a dad when she needs childcare help, but a donor when it comes time to make a big decision she doesn't want his input on. He calls himself dad when the baby's adorable at the park, but feels more like a donor when the school bill comes, you know? When we're designing our own families, we need clear written agreements, especially if children are involved.
And it is amazing how much, like, listening to Diana speaking about that, I'm like, it sounds so obvious that you would have those discussions before you entered an arrangement like that. But also, it should be obvious that even people who are like in heteronormative and mononormative setups should also have those situations. And it's not a given
conversations,
that they do.
You mean? Yeah.
Yeah, they should have those conversations. But it's not a given that they do. So, for example, when I was listening to this, I was just reminded of the fact that my parents, they literally like managed to get married without having a conversation about when or whether they would want kids. Like, to be fair, they only knew each other for like a few months before they got married, because they like fell in love like very fast, apparently, like good for them. But how could they, like, when they got married, apparently my dad told me that it came as a shock to him that mum was like, yeah, I want four kids and I want them before I'm 30.
Like, oh my God.
So suddenly he was like, oh, I thought we would, you know, I think we'll have a couple of years to like hang out, just us two. Nope. She was like, no, I want kids right now. And then like 5 years and four children later, dad was like, okay. Like, that's a bit of a shock to the system. But when I spoke to my dad about it, he said it was the best decision he'd ever made, which is very sweet. But it's actually the best decision he never made. Hello, listener. Just popping in to say that if you like this podcast, and if you're learning anything from it, please consider paying us for our work. Life of Bi is supported by Patreon, and we have a lovely bunch of people who pay us a little bit each month, and it helps us to keep this podcast going. So if you have the means, and if you like the podcast, please consider donating at patreon.com/lifeofbi. Thanks. Aren't people like Diana so inspiring?
So inspiring. It's just like all those people living their lives the way they want to.
Yeah, recognised by the laws. Hey, Mary, do we have any of those laws here in the UK? No, we don't.
Guys, buckle in. It's really shit over here. Under UK law... A child can only have two legal parents.
Boo. The law in the UK at present prohibits any person being married to or entering into a civil partnership with multiple partners. To do so is a criminal offence.
What the fuck? Mononormativity and marriage is king in the UK.
You get marriage allowances, tax breaks if you're married, you don't get inheritance tax.
And that's one of the reasons that same-sex marriage was such a big win. Although, you know, that's questioned.
Well, that's one of the reasons why people fought wanted for same-sex marriage so hard, because it didn't make sense that, like, queer people couldn't
didn't
have
get the
those,
same perks as hetero perks. Couples.
But why should we stop there? Just because those perks have been got for queer couples, they're still in a mononormative situation.
Yeah. Why shouldn't a single asexual person get tax breaks?
Yeah, you should protect the rights of unmarried people and people in different types of, and I love this phrase that we came across, different types of family constellations.
Should we just move to California?
I mean, I think that would be good.
Like, sometimes, I said this to my therapist the other day, I was like, sometimes I feel like all polyamorous people are in the States. Because, like, everyone that I follow... Like the author of Poly Secure, the podcast I listen to, Diana Adams, they're all in the same area. And honestly, Elle, I'm just like, maybe I should move.
Do you think there's an element of like, I'm laying back on the bed. Do you think there's an element of like British prudishness that enters into that? Which is like, I don't know, even in your polyamory situation, sometimes you're like, oh, be treading on each other's toes.
Yeah.
It's like pussyfooting around thing. Yeah. It's like, maybe that's why they're all in San Francisco.
I don't know. I've got loads of thoughts on this personally, which I think polyamory is actually like a really radical way of perceiving relationships. Radical. And there are lots of non-monogamous setups which are not that.
Yeah.
So there's a sort of like, sometimes you can get teased by something or like a setup that you think is like ideologically like really progressive. Yeah. And as you get closer, you're like, oh no, that's not, actually believe in those ideals. You're not actually working towards the same stuff as
you're
I am.
You're still operating in fine, a mononormative way.
But the
way.
Word polyamory is like a, sometimes
an umbrella
a decoy.
Term for people. And yeah, but
and
it's
I feel
not.
Like I've met, you know, a heart friend, a soulmate.
A heart friend.
And then I'm like, oh no, I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all in California, which is why I'm going to move there.
Okay, goodbye. And actually, Mary will get the chance to decide whether to move to San Francisco because we're going on holiday
we're
there.
We're going with our housemate, Seth.
We're going to Seth's homeland. If you have any recommendations in San Francisco, let us know because we do have listeners there.
Yeah, and I was looking up like polyamorous communities that I could visit when I was feeling really lonely about all this stuff. But,
so
you know,
sweet.
I looked up and then obviously it's like you have to have membership and like aww. Arguably like no one wants to meet me at a social because they're never going to see
you're
going to
fuck off, yeah, after your holiday.
Like besides I was just like, oh, maybe I'll get to meet my
but
brethren.
Maybe you could get like a long distance lover and you could write letters to each other.
I'd love that. I am going to I haven't told you this, but like Libby Simback, who hosts the podcast Making Polyamory Work, that's also my Bible, my polyamorous Bible.
Yeah.
She hosts these community meetups.
Is there one there when you're there?
I'm doing one.
Oh,
and they're
God.
On Zoom. I'm gonna do one exciting. The second we're back from California because I just want to talk to people
who are like you.
Who are like me.
I'm sorry I can't give you that.
You, listen, you're great to talk to about it.
I listen and I understand, but I think at heart I'm not a polyamorous soul.
I'm also mainly, I think what I'm talking about is actually poly-nerdery.
Yes, yeah, you're
I'm
so
a nerd.
Confused.
I'm a nerd about it.
The point is, and we must get back on track, the point is that the legal situation here in the UK is pretty shocking. And so we asked Lids, obviously it's not about family setups, but it is about buying a house with like your queer family, your found family. We asked Lids if the lawyer who helped them buy the house was surprised.
Wait, sorry.
So
the lawyer wasn't surprised.
The lawyer was really cool, actually. She was a nice... Yeah, the lawyer was cool. And I think lawyers in the UK are, like, increasingly used to this kind of collective group. Friends basically getting together and having these joint contracts on houses. Because, like...
how else would you get on?
How else? You can't afford it otherwise. And, you know, maybe that's a thing that people are doing more. But, I mean, like... My parents are really supportive. They were like, straight off the bat, like, that's a really cool idea.
Oh, well, that's good,
well,
isn't it?
That's good.
I think this actually comes back to what you were saying earlier about, like, the financial situation, which is what actually might benefit the sort of like conversations we're having right now about different kinds of families,
yeah,
is that because it is like literally fucking impossible to buy a place.
Yeah.
The, like, these things are going to become more normal.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of the reason why the lawyer wasn't shocked, because, like, I've heard of siblings buying houses together and, like,
yeah,
you know, it really is, like, the only way that it's possible at the moment.
Yeah.
So...
But it does still surprise, you know, like, if you talked about it, and I don't, anecdotally, if you say six of my mates are buying a house together, people are like more nervous than they would be. Yeah. People are a bit like, oh,
I think it's the number, it's the different amount. Just like six people buying a house together is pretty fucking unusual, isn't it?
Yeah. God, it's good though.
It's exciting.
Good on them.
Good on them.
Can't
I
wait
say.
To see it finished.
Now it's time for a little reflection.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a really snotty nose, so I'm going to blow it. I'll be back in a sec.
Elle, why did you edit out the sniff sound?
Because I don't want anyone to know how disgusting I am.
I just think it was a good sound effect. After you'd stop.
Listen, I can do it again.
Because you know, like, Billie Eilish does that. Like, she takes out her gum shield at the beginning of one of her tracks,
yeah,
on
but
this album.
I don't enjoy that much. People who have, what's it called? The sound thing. Misphonia.
Okay, yeah.
They hate that. And I'm sorry, guys, if you do, because... Impeccable timing. Should we save that for the Patreons for bloopers? No, I think we should leave those in.
Yeah, yeah.
For everyone.
Let's see. I don't know if they've actually ever heard one of my burps. Say that. Like it's a privilege.
Guys, Mary burps all the time. Okay, we're in the reflection point. Yeah, Mary has IBS.
Sorry, reflection.
We're reflecting
on ourselves now,
on our discoveries.
Because me and Elle have been talking quite a bit about this stuff.
Yeah, we have, because like we said, we're considering our options for the future. We just did part of our... Anyone who saw our Edinburgh show will know that it was kind of about whether we can carry on living with each other. And we didn't really reach a conclusion. Well, we love living with each other.
We love living together. We've just been through times when it was really hard.
Yeah, when we've been, like, for example, working together.
It was more, like, broadly about, I guess, going in different directions, right?
Yeah.
Which, we do. We have slightly different... We want different things.
We want different things from our lives. Like,
well, when you talk about the contraception thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, well, it's just funny how, like, life gives you The forks in the road, as who wrote that? Robert Frost.
I don't know.
The path less taken.
I don't know, babe.
Shut up, Elle. And, like, I've always known... So Mary's always really wanted a baby. And you've been very, like, vocal about that. And I've never really been that interested in having a baby. And I recently went to get... To, like, look at contraception options at the doctor's. And... they were like outlining all these options and very much within the context of me being 27. They were like, how old are you? And when would you like kids? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Because they were like, if you go for the Myrina coil, that's 5 years that you'd
want.
Did
they say when or do?
Or if.
If.
They said, when, if, do you want kids?
Right.
But it's like the very fact that that was like asked as a question because I'm in my late 20s. I was like, hang on a second. I'm 18 years old. Why are you asking me this? And so they were saying, like, this option would be like 5 years until you could have a child, and then this option would be 3 years. And I told you about this. I was like, I'm gonna go for the 5 year option. And you were like, oh
yeah,
oh really? And I was like, yeah, of course, I'm not gonna have a child in the next 5 years. And you were like, oh, I think I might want a child within the next 5 years. And I was like, oh God. And then I was like, do I want a child? Like, what if I do want a child? I don't think I do, but like, I wouldn't be able to have one. It's like the moment someone tells you, you can't cough, you immediately want to cough.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't have a child. Hang on. Well, what if I want one?
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's just like, and also researching this episode, you know, I was thinking, where are we going to be in 10 years?
Yes.
What are we gonna, I think you'll have a child.
Yeah, hopefully. If I can, I think I will. Although, you know, again, this is just ambiguity, right? Because since dating it more and more, I now sometimes think, do I want that?
Yeah.
And is that ever going to happen? But I guess relating this back to queerness, or like how we view our lives from a queer perspective, I think there's... So one of the things that I get scared about having a baby, so I've always wanted to like be pregnant and have a baby. I haven't always wanted to keep it. That's a, like a newer development.
You mean you would like...
I've wanted the experience of pregnancy for like a long, long time. And then actually wanting to raise a child feels to me it's a distinct desire. Like it's come later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for me, the problem with that is I haven't been able to imagine it. I've really struggled to imagine my life in the future with a kid because of this nuclear idea where I was picturing like me, one other partner, if it's my partner now, and then having a house and having a kid. And I do not want that. I know that I do not want that. There's something about it that makes me feel like claustrophobic, like depressed. I don't want it. I think I would feel really unhappy. And so one of the joys, I think, and one of the, I think where a lot of my nerdiness around polyamory comes from as well, is it's this other way of like doing that thing. And if there are other people around me, then it feels exciting again for me to have a kid if I'm like raising it.
In an unconventional way.
In a community. And it's not just about who's...
The nucleus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whose genes are in that child. Like, and I'm interested in raising other children that aren't mine.
Yeah.
I would also really like that to be part of a system.
I mean, I'd love to help you raise a child.
I mean, babe, if I have one...
I don't have a choice. Forget what Diana Adams was saying. Like, you don't have a choice.
You'll be conscripted in, yeah.
But it's interesting because for me, I've always just... Because I've never had that, like, deep want... of what you describe of like the physical sensation of like pregnancy and like you've wanted that for a long time. I've never felt that urge, and I've always assumed that means that I don't want kids at all, without having considered all the other routes there are to having them. And so it's forced me to like reconsider. But I think like...
As in you might adopt or have a child another way, or...
Yeah, maybe, like, in a way that allows me to take more time to make the choice. Because, like, there's a time element, isn't there? And honestly, I can't imagine being selfless enough to have a child. Like, I can't imagine at the moment being willing to give up the parts of my life that I would have to give up in order to have a child.
Is this your Taurus energy coming through?
This is my Taurus. It's like, it's quite an ugly part of me that's like, well, I conceive of it as like a very self-centered part of me that I'm just like, if I'm honest with myself, I don't know if I could sacrifice my life in that way for something else.
That isn't selfish. It's just, I think that's really wise.
And it might change. And I guess that's why...
Also, it's about your priorities. Like, it's not selfish to have a different priority.
Yeah. And I think it's just the time thing is what would make you make a decision like that prematurely. Because maybe that will change. But it might be after the point at which I'm like biologically able to have a child.
But just to reassure you more here, it's not that you're a selfish person.
Yeah.
It's that the demands of a child would like specifically interrupt the things about your life that you really cherish.
Yeah.
In the way that a friendship or a partnership wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah.
So it's like what you're willing to give up. But you are a selfless person in your friendships.
Oh, that's very nice, thank you.
Well, not selfless. I actually think that's actually not a good thing to be. Selfful.
Yes.
So neither selfish nor selfless. You're selfful. You are self.
You are yourself.
You are yourself.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, like... And with the sometimes, also when we've been like talking about this episode and thinking about the things, I said to you the other day that sometimes it feels like all of this consideration is like an intellectual exercise for me. And it's like for you, it's like looking into a crystal ball. It's like your future. And that's why it excites you so much.
Yeah.
And I like see it and I admire it. And I'm inspired by it, but I can't necessarily imagine it for myself. And sometimes when I think about the fact that my ideal setup is like living alone very luxuriously. Sometimes I feel like...
Is it living alone? It's not with your partner.
Well, you know, it'd be nice if Andrew was there. I don't know if... I don't know.
Andrew
was like, I think I'd like to try living with just Andrew, but I don't know how that would work. I'd love to try it. But basically, I don't imagine myself in like a big communal living situation. That makes me feel quite nervous because I'm a bit of an introvert. I'm not saying that you have to be an extrovert to live like that, but you know, for various reasons, that makes me feel quite nervous, and sometimes that makes me feel like I'm not a good enough queer. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, we're talking about. I actually think living on your own is a super queer thing to do,
but like the way you talk about. Polycule mm-hmm. and like sharing childcare responsibilities.
But so you're adding into this monogamy, is that what you mean? Is that also in there?
I think monogamy is in there, yeah.
So it's a combination of monogamy and living alone or maybe with another person.
Yeah.
But that's not, I mean, this is what they say in Sounds Fake But Okay, so I'm just parroting them. But I do think it's completely true, which is like no choice is better than any other choice. Mm-hmm. The operative word is choice. And if you don't, if you're like, what they're empowering you to do, this idea of like no should, there is no should way of doing anything, is you choose and think about what you want.
Yeah.
And even what you were saying then about like how to have a baby and there being no should, there might be other ways for you to do that thing. Mm-hmm. All of that is like queer thinking in the sense that it's... Mm. Not taking anything as a script.
It's like
there is no
granted,
script.
Yeah,
there is no script of how to do anything.
It's like the act of thinking about it rather than just stepping on the train and letting the train go.
Yeah, and it's about it's about stepping into like yourself and what's going to be good for you. So like they say this in the book, like you might be an ace person who doesn't want to live with anyone, and like you know, good luck to you. It's going to be financially harder, but like, you know, that's like a beautiful thing to do if it's what you want.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah.
There's nothing better or worse by any of these scenarios.
Yeah. It's like, it's the act of consideration.
And also there's no blanket way of doing any of them. That's the other thing. Like, I'm looking at my mates in this 6-person house.
Uh-huh.
And there are elements of their living that I would really want. And there are others that I don't. I wouldn't, my poly living or my communal living wouldn't look the same. Because I'm a different person. I want, like, I've got different people that are close around me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Liz, for example, is like sharing a bedroom with her partner within the house. Mm-hmm. And I would not want that if I was, the whole point of communal living would be that I could be close to my partner. But without having, without sacrificing my personal space. So I've got that as well. Like,
see,
I don't want to sacrifice my personal space.
Within the, what you said, like, would I want to live with my partner? Like, I can't imagine not having my own room.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, yeah.
The whole thing collapses and unfolds, right? Which is, you could have your own room. That doesn't mean it has to have a bed in it. Or you could have two different beds, or it like your who you want to live with isn't necessarily someone you want to sleep with. Who you have sex with isn't necessarily someone you want to sleep next to. Your bed fellow or your bed partner might be a different person from someone you want to fuck. Like, none of these things have to correlate. It's the culture that like bunches it all into one and puts all this pressure on one thing.
It's so funny because, you know, we're talking about this as like 20 somethings. And, you know, when I say to people my age, oh, my parents don't share a bed, people are like, oh, is everything okay? Like, or like, if I've mentioned it in passing, I'm like, yeah, I think not sharing a bed saved their marriage. Like, I think more people should be thinking, like, that's a tiny thing that they do that is like slightly outside the norm.
Yeah.
That like facilitates a better communicative relationship.
Yeah.
And it's like, even on that level, people could learn to like, you don't have to share a bed with your partner.
Yeah.
Like, if they snore, chuck them out.
Yeah, Libby Sinbeck even talks it with food.
Really?
Just like some people are matched up to you in food and others aren't.
Oh my God.
Food might be a really important like love language for you, but it might not, you might not be able to, like you and me don't have very compatible diets. So yes. Like we both love food and it's very special when we get to share it together or share an enjoyment of a thing together.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen.
It doesn't, we don't cross over often. That much.
Yeah.
So like, would you necessarily have to cook with the same person?
Yeah.
You have to cook for the same person. You have to eat the same shit. Like people don't necessarily want the same things.
Yeah.
How did we get onto this?
Oh, I don't know.
Where are we going? And what do we want? should we end actually by just describing our current dream?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
What's your current dream?
I've been dreaming of a flat. It is a flat. This like is like architecturally in London like probably impossible. Or maybe the bottom floor of a house.
Uh-huh.
Which is like a, the whole thing is like very calm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the two people I'm currently thinking about living with are both very, very tidy, and it's going to be like really calm. Everyone's got their own room, and then there's this big communal living and eating space, maybe a study attached or different. I don't know how me and my partner would work out our rooms, but there'd be some sort of like flowing work situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's currently the dream. And then occasionally I do picture like a little baby crawling around.
Mm.
And being able to be looked after by different people and having people over. But it's like a really calm space that's also communal. Because I think sometimes communal living comes with this idea of like frenetic student living.
Coming and going.
Because of the kittenhood thing.
Yeah.
Or like it being messy. And I like really can't live like that. So I'm just like imagining a world in which
a sanctuary.
Communal living can be like a sanctuary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm imagining that just down the road from yours.
Yeah.
Because that is crucial. Crucial to me is that I think I do want to live. I really value my own space and I enjoy being alone. But whenever I imagine myself living alone or with a partner, geographically, I'm much more concerned geographically with what's happening than like architecturally or like semiotically.
You want to be close.
I just want to be in a community, like in an area where all my friends are.
I hope you always live down the road, Elle.
Yeah.
Also, this is great for me because if my like home life is really stressful and you go on holiday to Nice, I can stay in your flat for a week to like cool off and have some alone time.
Also, actually, part of my dream is that I don't work at home. So part of the dream is that we have a studio somewhere that we share. So we cohabit that space together and we have... And then we have our separate sort of
beautiful. We've got a place to meet. So we still share a space.
Yeah, which is like a conceptual space, an artistic space.
God, this is like quite a zen exercise.
Yeah, it's really nice, isn't
it? Very calming. I encourage you all to like envisage your dream with no rules.
Manifest.
No, I don't even mean...
It's not even manifest because...
Then you get into the anxiety of like, how the fuck's that ever going to happen?
Yeah,
and like in our dream just then, we multiplied what is like one space into three.
Yeah. Because I think from my space, I still want it to be a very open space. I want to invite people to it often and to share it with people. But I want to be able to...
Ultimately, they go home.
I want to be able to close the doors.
Yeah.
And be in my sanctuary.
Yeah.
Oh,
may it happen. On that note, this podcast is supported.
Yeah, go on, tell them.
Yeah. This podcast is supported by Patreon. which is a wonderful scheme which allows artists like us to be funded. It means we're funded by the listener. Basically, we don't have any ads, we don't have any sponsorship. We're here in our bedrooms recording this podcast for you, making this in our own time. And we are so grateful to every single one of the people. It's nearly 50.
Babes, I checked.
How many?
We're on 76 Patreons.
Oh my God.
I know.
76 Patreons.
And I think we might be up to 78 actually this week, because we got a couple of extras.
Anyway, we love this podcast. We learn so much from making every episode. It's
a joy. We're so thankful to the fact that 76 to 78 people actually donate. It's really amazing.
And if you like the work that we make, if it helps you go to sleep, if it's nice while you're cooking, if however you listen to us, I know people that mates of ours listen to it in the car, which is cute.
That's cute.
Then please consider paying us for the work that we do. We're not looking for that much a month. Most of our patrons give us about $2.50 a month.
It makes all the difference.
Every little helps, and it just means that we can carry on.
Yeah. And before we go, we want to give you some podcast recommendations.
Yes.
With the also the note that if you like the podcast, please share it with people you think you would like
yes.
it. Because, you know, things like this, especially episodes that we did today, like the episode we did today, you know, I think people are really interested in alternative ways of living.
Mm.
And like, it helps everyone to kind of broaden their idea of what they might want in the future.
Yeah.
And so send it on if you think it would be interesting for someone. And with that in mind, here are some podcast recs. So as we said, Blind Boy, who we owe the perpetual kittenhood idea to.
Sounds fake, but okay, because the authors of that book also originated with a podcast about asexuality.
Yeah. Esther Perel, I mean...
Does she need an introduction?
No.
And to be honest, I actually have something. I have a bone to pick with Esther Perel.
Oh, really?
Well, don't you find the ads on her... It's difficult. I find it difficult to maintain my almost idolatrous image of her while she's got an Amazon Prime advert.
Has she got an Amazon Prime advert?
In the middle of her thing.
But is she saying it?
I don't think she's saying that one.
Yeah.
But she says a lot of them and I...
Hey, listen, she can avoid that if she had a Patreon.
Yeah.
Would we take Amazon Prime sponsorship if we were offered it?
I've thought about what we would do if we were offered sponsorship, and I think we'd have to like issue an apology. I don't know. I would hope that we don't ever have to, but like Patreon, even with 76, like it doesn't pay us like enough to carry on. It's not a wage.
I think we would have to take sponsorship.
It's a bonus.
We would have to.
So I do understand why people like Esther Perel do it, but I struggle with it.
Yeah.
In her. Anyway, that doesn't detract from the fact that I think her podcast is amazing. I listen
to
it all the time.
Where do we begin?
But I would just, you know, like question the listener to like think about the podcasts that you listen to and which ones are sponsored and which ones aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the independent ones and they need your help. And the other one is Libby Simbach that I name dropped earlier, Making Polyamory Work. I think she's about to release a new bunch of episodes. I've listened to every single one, sometimes twice. It is literally my Bible. If there's a problem, I just go back to the episode that's about it. And I'm like, what does she say?
Mm-hmm.
It's great. She feels like a friend.
Right.
Is that it?
I think that might be it for today.
Oh God, I had such a nice time.
It's been a really fun one.
I've loved it. Also, one other thing I think could be cute, which is like if you follow us on Instagram at Hotter Project, or you're a patron of ours, I would love to know if any of our listeners are living what kind of family, queer home setups you guys are living in, or what your dreams are. You could play the same game we did of like just imagining it, what it looks like. I think we'd love to hear from you about what that looks like. Because we can always do more episodes on this in future.
Yeah, that'd be so exciting.
Particularly if you've got kids involved, we'd love to talk to you. I would love to talk to you.
Yeah, we tried to find some people, you know, to interview about this, but it's, you know, it's quite difficult to find them out there. So
let us know.
Let us know. Lots of love.
All right, lots of love, guys. Thank you. Life of Bi was written, edited, and hosted by us, Elle Potter and Mary Higgins.
Sound design and production by Tom Foskett-Barnes.
And a big thanks to our newest patrons,
Rachel, Lucas, Forrest, and Rodolfo. What amazing names you all have.
Bye! Bye.